I am here today with Lori Knudsen. Lori is a registered nurse. She is also a board-certified holistic nurse. She is the Senior Director of Community Health and Wellness Services for Touchstone Mental Health in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The first thing I want to ask you, Lori, is if you could just give us a brief description of your current role.
Sure. So right now, I am the Senior Director of Health and Wellness Services for Touchstone Mental Health. And the role is basically bringing health and wellness services across the organization, so internally to the clients we currently serve, as well as externally to the community. And in that role, we built a community health and wellness center that's open to the public. And so my role is both developing the programs and services through that health and wellness center, as well as looking at sustainability and future options.
Can you talk a little bit about Touchstone Mental Health and what's kind of unique with what
Sure.
you guys are doing?
Yes. So Touchstone Mental Health has been around for 32 years. And its philosophy started really by five social workers from the University of Minnesota who had a very holistic belief in mental health. They did not see the separation of mind and body. They really looked at the whole person. And as social workers, they also looked at whole systems. So how could a person in the community be served individually and personalized through this philosophy of holism, as well as the multitude of resources that are available to individuals? And so from a very early time period, Touchstone has had this philosophy of whole person, whole system care. So this idea of bringing integrative mental health is really the next evolution for the organization, and bringing it beyond those that they currently serve, but inviting people from the public of all venues when it comes to mental health, no matter if there is a diagnosis or if somebody just has a concern or feels stress in their life.
So almost coming to it from a not only an illness model, but also from a holistic and preventative
Exactly.
standpoint.
In fact, that truly is our current state, and our future state is to promote people's mental health versus thinking of it as disease and illness.
Now, kind of related to that, and we've been talking about integrative mental health. What does integrative mental health mean to you? I know you mentioned that a little bit before, but
yeah.
could you
Sure.
talk a little bit more
Sure.
about that?
From my perspective, integrative mental health is a couple different things. It is about really connecting the mind and the body. So oftentimes, individuals who have a mental illness or mental health challenge, the focus is truly about the mental aspects of who they are as a human being. When we think about integrative mental health, it is about bringing the connection of the mind and the body, the physical health and the mental health, and I would also say bringing in the spiritual components, however that is for that individual. And then the other part about that is all the options to services and helping that person. So that's more of the integrated component where we bring in complementary therapies along with whatever they are doing from more of a conventional management perspective in their health and well-being.
So basically, integrative mental health is this holistic approach. But it's inclusive, not exclusive, if I'm understanding you correctly.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Now, you're focusing on integrative mental health and holism at Touchstone Mental Health. Tell me a little bit about how your journey started into integrative mental health.
Sure. I started in my nursing career, actually prior to nursing, thinking about being a psychologist, and then realized as I was starting school in that arena that it was limited in my perspective in how I would approach a person and their health and well-being. And so nursing became my second choice, and I fell in love with it because of its holistic perspective. And knowing that I could be with a person in this more integrative way, dealing with their physical aspects as well as the mental health, for me, just felt like the personal calling that I had been looking for. So I actually started in physical medicine and rehabilitation, where people had spinal cord injuries, brain injuries, and other disabilities, and I was in the acute hospital. And what I found during that time period is that medicine did a great job when it came to the structural disabilities, the spinal cord injury, the brain injury, but it lacked greatly in looking at a person's emotional, social, psychological, and spiritual well-being. Mm. And I also felt that there was a limitation in managing chronic conditions or chronic pain at that time. So I started looking outside of my normal nursing practice and became engaged in biofeedback and became a biofeedback therapist. Started doing energy work, guided imagery, aromatherapy. So I became trained in a multitude of complementary therapies and just engaged that in my nursing career and saw repeatedly the profound effects of this integrative approach to a human being. So, and that took me into the founding executive director for the Penny George Institute for Health and Healing with Allina Health. And that has become a very successful national model, which I think its success is because it's what people are looking for.
Tell me a little bit more about your relationship with Penny George and how that started and came to be and your work with them.
I actually met Penny through a physician friend, and we happened to be at a national conference in Hawaii on women's health. And Penny and I had a conversation about what we both envisioned and dreamed for the future when it came to medicine at that time versus thinking about health. And she had this dream of making something happen at her home hospital, which is Abbott Northwestern,
here in Minneapolis.
And I had spent 16 years of my nursing career at Abbott. And so we just engaged in this conversation of a vision. And within about 2 years, they decided to give a lovely financial gift to Abbott Northwestern Hospital to begin, at that time, what we were calling the Healing Environment Initiative.
So Penny George?
Penny George, yes. Yeah. Bill and Penny, so the George Family Foundation, made that donation. And I was hired to take the lead to bring it to what it currently is, although that it became much more than we had envisioned when we were in Hawaii.
Okay. And so how long were you with the Penny George?
So we started the Penny George Institute in 2002 and started services in 2003. And so my career there was 10 years. And during that time, we developed a very comprehensive inpatient program with 22 providers seeing patients at their bedside, an outpatient clinic, a fitness center, a research center, and then we opened an integrative oncology center. And since then, one more clinic has been opened.
How big of a part did integrative mental health play in the work you did at the Penny George Institute?
Well, it's interesting because people would enter our services, or we would see people in the hospital, and it was usually focused around a physical health. They were there for some disease or illness or chronic condition around their physical health. But what all of us realized was we couldn't move beyond that if we didn't address where they were emotionally, what their beliefs and values were about their own health and the choices that they made, and how they could be empowered to actually be part of the healing future for themselves. And so when we started to address the mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of the person, the physical aspects started to show a difference. And so I think we just organically realized that's where you start with somebody, is in their mental health. I'm not talking mental illness or disease, but in their mental health.
Which is a part of somebody's overall well-being.
Exactly.
Looking at different ways of viewing health and well-being, is there any specific way or any specific approach that you think works best in integrative mental health? A philosophy or an approach that has worked for you to kind of view wellness or well-being?
Sure. Well, I think when you're working with individuals, the first piece is really to understand an individual's story and not to come with any preconceived ideas based on some diagnosis that they may have. And so as the provider, it's really important to do your own work and understand your own attitudes and beliefs and values around health, healthcare, and actually what your role is in partnering with somebody and helping them to be healthier. So I think fundamentally it's understanding yourself as a provider and what you are coming to that relationship with and how that directly impacts that individual's ability in their own health and healing. And then the other part is that our role is to empower individuals. We're there to help care and cure when we can, but the real benefit that we have as providers is understanding the innate healing capacity of the individual. And so underlying my belief is that everyone has the potential internally if we only had the knowledge, tools, skills, and resources to make that happen. And that's our role as providers.
So kind of, I guess what you're saying is integrative mental health focuses greatly on the ability of the individual to heal themselves and for us as providers to aid them in that process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why it's a partnership. It's a relationship. It is not one taking the power over someone else. It is really the power with someone and how that kind of ignites an individual's ability to really own their health and take charge of that and understand how our bodies are really quite miraculous in their ability to recover. Underline it's a partnership.
So thinking about integrative mental health and how integrative mental health is inclusive, which means we not only think about talk therapy, we not only think about aromatherapy, we not only think about medications, we try to think about all these things and what fits the individual best.
Right.
What can you tell me about your experience working with different providers from both the more traditional side of the fence and then folks that are coming from a more kind of a novel way to look at health and healing?
It's a great question because we make this assumption that because we all have the underlying intention to help somebody in their health and well-being, that we share common ways in which to deliver that care. From the more conventional side, I think we get caught up in the mechanisms of action for certain things such as drugs or invasive therapies. And again, it's about what we do to a person versus what we help the person do for themselves. And I do believe that in conventional medicine, we have enormous advances that do help us. Medications are important for people. It's just understanding people in a more personalized way instead of a cookie-cutter way. On the more complementary or alternative side of providers, there is a lack of understanding about the science in some ways. And so really understanding, you know, the beauty of medicine and where it can help. And so this joining of forces is really important, but the two worlds have to have a shared belief that they're both there to empower the individual with the gifts and tools that they have to do that. And I would also say on the complementary therapy side or the alternative medicine side is that there is sometimes an overarching belief that everything natural is what's right. And again, I would say that just mirrors what conventional providers think about the science. And so it really is the science and the arts of healing that bring it together.
When we think about introducing different ways of being and different ways of approaching mental illness, especially when we think about people that are struggling already with mental illness, is there any specific way you think it's best to approach people that are maybe not used to trying different things, like even just exercise or meditation or yoga or whatever it is, that are not used to that? Do you have a kind of an approach you think might?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways. One is the nurse practitioner that works with us in our community health and wellness center does what we call
Touchstone Mental Health.
She does what we call narrative interviews. So again, the starting place is understanding where that person is and what their knowledge base is about their own health and the choices that they've made around that. But then it is to find out just how connected they actually are from their mind and body. So, you know, asking some opening questions about what's your knowledge base? What does it feel like when you don't feel good versus what does it feel like when you might feel happy or joyful? And to start to articulate those feelings so that people get this connection of mind and body. So our fitness specialist at Touchstone, he talks about when he first introduces fitness or physical activity, his first question to people is, what brings joy to your life? Because that's what he wants to focus on. That's the end goal is happiness, joy, optimal health. And if that's the end goal for both in the relationship, then you figure out what works best for that person. So, and introducing different things to people like yoga, if they've never experienced it, you start very simply. You know, it's about your breath. It's about a little bit of movement to get relationship with what you're thinking and how it feels. And so it's really quite simple, but it can be quite profound.
Mm-hmm. How do you think integrative mental health can play a role in the treatment for people that have severe and persistent mental illness? Mm-hmm. We often think about maybe some of these integrative approaches as just for people that have more moderate symptoms. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But how do you see integrative mental health for those with severe and persistent mental illness?
Sure. Well, I think you really have to start quite simplistically, because they have been treated in the medical world in a multitude of different ways. And in my experiences, there's a great deal of fear about even developing a relationship with another healthcare provider. Mm-hmm. So you actually have to start with the trust in that relationship and help them to understand that you're not there to do anything to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're there to help them reach whatever goal they want in their life, and that you have an expertise and different options to be in that relationship with them. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's the simplest things. Our nutritionist at Touchstone Mental Health and the Community Health and Wellness Center will just ask them, give me an idea of what you eat in a day. And so for some people, we work with a homeless population. Mm-hmm. We work with people who are really restricted economically in their budgets. And so you hear all kinds of things that people eat that have absolutely no nutritional value. Mm-hmm. And so it's, where can we help them resource things that are high protein, really inexpensive, and we're working with a community organization who has a program that works with the homeless, providing high nutrient foods for very low cost, if no cost. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's just helping them to understand the power of food as medicine, and then the appropriate resources that fit their economic ability. Mm-hmm. So that's just an example of starting small and simple and creating the opportunities for them.
What do you think about the current state of integrative mental health?
I think we are on this edge where we're about to burst. I think it is just becoming something that people are aware of. We've been doing integrative medicine around physical health for quite a while now. I mean, I think about it, it's almost been 25 years I've been doing it. It's been most current maybe in the last 5 to 10 years. But in mental health, I think it's just coming forward to be known. And the more that we can demonstrate and provide some evidence base around this and show some outcome research, I think we are going to see such a shift in the provider base, their training, mm-hmm. as well as what people are able to receive in the community to prevent or promote their mental health. Mm-hmm. So I think we are just on the edge. It is such an exciting time. So many resources and research is coming out about the brain. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I feel like, how do we keep up with what's coming forward and do that in a way that we can provide care on a one-to-one that's meaningful for that individual? But I think it's just an incredibly exciting time in integrative mental health.
I agree. When we think about integrative mental health and where we might be heading, where do you see integrative mental health heading in the next few years?
Yeah, I think, you know, I would tell you that I believe we have the greatest opportunities and options in community mental health mm-hmm. versus in the acute care setting. Mm. And I say that because we want to prevent people from getting to the acute care setting.
Yes.
So our greatest impact is to educate people, and not just in providing them or pushing out information, but truly engaging them in education and learning. Mm-hmm. So I think the community, through faith-based organizations who are very open to this, mm-hmm. to employers, we're just starting to work with employers around integrative health, including integrative mental health. Mm-hmm. Smaller community organizations, the YMCAs and YWCAs, there's such an openness to come in and provide this kind of expertise and knowledge. So I believe that our ability to make some big shifts and the leverage point is really in the community providing integrative mental health education and services.
And it sounds like Touchstone Mental Health is really involved with prevention mm-hmm. as well.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about the four quadrants of mental health and physical health, and the fourth quadrant is the, you know, highest, most complex physical chronic disease and mental illness. Mm-hmm. And then the other three quadrants, of course, are the areas where people are have some mental health issues or physical and a combination of both, but not quite severe. We want to focus on those three quadrants. Mm-hmm. We want to prevent people from getting to that fourth quadrant, where it becomes increasingly more difficult to be able to change the physiology, let alone the mental status of somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's also where the most cost is. Mm-hmm. So if we can start to shift in these other three quadrants through prevention and health promotion, mm-hmm. we will significantly impact the smallest but most costly quadrant.
Well, and it makes so much sense, because the atypical antipsychotics, which have really revolutionized the field in some ways, do have some very significant metabolic side effects.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we know that people are on combinations of these drugs mm-hmm. without the understanding of blood sugar levels and, you know, impact on weight and metabolic syndrome. Mm-hmm. So, we want to prevent people from getting there or using those medications most appropriately.
Yeah, exactly.
The only other comment I would say is there are some challenges ahead of us as we continue what I call a movement. This mm-hmm. is a movement, a cultural movement in health and medicine. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenges really are how providers are being trained, you know, in education, mm-hmm. yeah. that we really need to broaden the understanding of what health and medicine can look like for this population. Mm-hmm. I think policy, we need to be very active from a policy and legislative perspective mm-hmm. to get inclusion of this type of health and healing perspective and modalities. Mm-hmm. And third, I would say we have opportunities in schools. Mm. We need to capture a younger population so that this becomes the way that they think, the way of life for them, that healthy lifestyles is on their forefront. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the academic centers where people are being trained in medicine and healthcare, mm-hmm. Our policy and legislators, and then schools where we have such opportunity with youth.
With the youth, you're kind of talking about helping them to think about health in a different way.
Yes.
And that mental health and mental well-being is a part of our overall
yes.
well-being.
Yes.
Those are not separate compartments. Is
exactly.
That,
yeah. In fact, we say at Touchstone that there is no health without mental health.
Right.
That mental health is the underlying capacity for us to make the right decisions about our physical health. There's so
yeah.
much coming out
yeah.
on brain science that the opportunities right now are endless. When we think just, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we didn't believe that the brain could change its function, its
yeah.
physical structure.
Yeah.
And now we know about neuroplasticity and
yeah.
and that we actually
that the brain can actually change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I saw this in physical medicine and rehabilitation with stroke patients.
Yeah.
But because you retrain the brain. But
yes.
now all of a sudden, science is saying we have evidence that that's actually true and we can see it. And so just knowing that means
yeah.
we can retrain the way that we are as human beings. So
yes.
I think that that's so exciting. And I mean, the reality is our thoughts directly impact our physiology. We know this through the science of psychoneuroimmunology.
Yeah.
And there's a great quote from the Vedic text that says, if you want to know what your thoughts were yesterday, look at your body today.
Right.
If you want to know what your body will look like tomorrow, look at your thoughts today.
Yeah.
I think it's a great, simple summary of what is truth.
I don't know. We created this separation between physical and mental health that's totally fictional. It has
it
no
is.
Basis in reality.
Yep.
It has really no basis in science either.
Right.
When we think about it.
And now, and we became so specialized in medicine that we physically separated
yes.
how we treat people.
Yes.
And now I think we're realizing that that isn't enough.
Yes.
And we're coming full circle.
Yes.
So again, I think there's just so much in the future for, I know for my kids, so I'm excited for them and my grandkids. And we're right there. We're ready.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, just the point also, which I think is so important, that even people with severe and persistent mental illness in their recovery phase,
yes,
putting all those little components together, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and often it's a matter of building some sort of a program or approach or supporting people
right.
and figuring out what nurtures them.
Right. I have to tell you, just in the relationships with some of the clients that we've had, One of the most profound things that we hear from people is that nobody told me I had the capacity to make changes, to do things, to own my own health. People always looked at what I can't do, what's wrong with me, versus what is within me that I have the capacity for.
Yeah.
And just that shift for somebody, no matter how challenged they are in their mental illness, brings a sense of hope and possibility. And that's the opportunity to go in and start to have relationship and make change. The only other thing I would mention is that, and you know this well, that the population of people who struggle with mental illness rarely are touched.
Yes.
And for people to come in and have any kind of touch therapy is such a huge change for them. They begin to feel something they've never felt before by it being touched.
Yeah.
And we know the science around the failure to thrive when babies aren't touched. And so why wouldn't we touch adults?
Oh, yeah.
Some
wonderful research from our neighbors in Wisconsin.
Yeah, right, right. Well, and if we start to think about the senior population and mental illness, I mean, simple things that are being used in senior care facilities like gentle hand massage.
Yes.
I mean, just that to induce the relaxation response when somebody, anxiety is beginning to arise in somebody.
Yes.
So there are simple things where touch does not have to be about the full body. It can be distally in the feet or the hands, and it can make huge difference and immediate change. A lot of this is about the provider's own fear, which is actually probably based on myth.
Yeah.
You know, that if a provider can get past their own fear and then be again in relationship in their mode of being the expert from a medical perspective, but also understanding then the options and resources and tools that they can bring to this individual, that shifts the whole potential for healing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming.